it's the restart in a lot of ways from the events of what happened in South Africa. The man who shared duties and guided you through a lot of that was Adam Collins here on SEN. Adam, welcome home and welcome back to 1116 SEN.
Thanks, Joe. Great to be home. Looking out across Adelaide Oval here, not a cloud in the sky. You talked about the Virat Kohli video earlier.
Yeah.
Now, gee whiz, I must have watched that 15 times last night. It's just... it's R-rated, isn't it? Just
well, it is porn for cricket fans.
Yeah,
isn't it?
There's only one way of describing it. It's precisely that. It's like the Wednesday before footy season starts. You know that you're about to watch your team on the weekend for the first time after a long pre-season. And even though Australia has played Test cricket and plenty of white ball cricket since what went down at Newlands in March, as our friends the great cricketers say, if it doesn't happen in Australia, it doesn't matter. So I feel as though there's an element of that tomorrow here at Adelaide.
So you're just back from the West Indies,
yeah,
where you worked on the women's T20. Give us a picture of that tournament, what it was able to achieve, how it was to broadcast.
So I think it was a risk having a standalone Women's World T20, not because the cricket hasn't held up, but on the basis that they'd never done it before, and the West Indies for the last 20 years has had a steady decline in international cricket. But they pulled it off spectacularly. I spent the bulk of my time in St. Lucia before joining the Australian team in Antigua for the finals, and sold out crowds and such a huge emotional investment from the local audience, whether they were watching the West Indies or other sides play. It was quite inspirational. I think we all want to see the healthy culture of Caribbean cricket. We all grew up with a magnificent West Indies men's side, and of course the women have won two World T20s, so there is a bit of a flavour of that as well. So I felt that was such a raging success. And in terms of the way the Australian side performed, we talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago. I think they felt they cruised through tournaments historically, and they were able to play at 70% or so. Meg Lanning made that observation to me before the final, I think it was. And the gap has narrowed so significantly in women's cricket that we went to the tournament with probably throwing a blanket over six sides that could win it. And previous women's tournaments, it might have been, you know, Australia and England and maybe a plucky outsider. But the fact that it's got so strong, that informed the way the Australians prepared, and they played such an aggressive brand of cricket. Not in the way that we talked about with the Australian men last year, but in terms of how competitive they were and how they took the game on, they were worthy winners. And it felt to me as though the victory in the final meant a lot more than just winning their first trophy for 4 years. It was almost a validation of a couple of years of planning since they, well, 18 months of planning since that departure from the World Cup against India last year.
What about being there and travelling around? So what cities were you based in?
Yeah, so St. Lucia isn't traditionally a cricket country. They've had 14 changes of hands colonially between Britain and France.
Yep.
So as a consequence, they've only ever had three international cricketers. Darren Sammy was the first one. So he's a hero there. Darren Sammy is on every billboard, whether it's for
really?
Advertising booze or mobile telephones or sport. You know, he'll be doubtless the Prime Minister one day. So that's the one thing you notice. It's not a cricket country per se, but they embraced it so magnificently. There's a big grandstand at the ground there, and when the West Indies were ticking over and defeating England, I've never seen a stand heave quite like it. It was just a great experience to witness and see how they were falling in love with the game almost. And as for Antigua, we know that the rich history that country has with the game, the four knights of Antiguan cricket, including Viv Richards, Kirtley Ambrose. Probably the highlight, to put myself in the story here, the highlight of the trip was when I pulled up at the old recreation ground. I don't play international cricket at the rec anymore, but that's where Viv made his 56-ball 100. You know, a very famous venue for a lot of reasons. Brian Lara twice broke the world record there in 1994, then again in 2004 with his 400. Sitting out in the car park, there's a few sort of food stalls like you might expect in Brunswick Street or Smith Street. It was a very sort of Melbourne experience. Alas, it's in this car park, and picked up a bite to eat, took a seat at the bench, and who's sitting next to me but Kirtley Ambrose, just there minding his own business, looking just as intimidating as he always does. And I asked the owner of the shop how often she sees him. She says he always drops in and says hello. It's still a ground that means a lot to him. So Antigua, again, they came out in huge force. Over 10,000 people to the final, which is no mean feat. I doubt that the England men will get 10,000 people watching them when they tour the West Indies in January and February. So, yeah, probably the main takeout for me was just how much the Caribbean does love cricket. We just need to find a way into it again because the men's side's been so disappointing for so long.
So it's hard to understand from afar, isn't it? Because it's a confected team, as we understand from all those countries. There was a school of thought that it absolutely had lost its place across a generation, and then NBA was a big part of that, the infiltration of NBA. Is there any understanding of whether it is weaving its way back into public affection and more particularly to kids to provide the next generation of cricketers?
I feel as though the women's cricket has got a good avenue towards doing such a thing, because I don't know whether it's still the case here that there is a distinction between the Australian team and the Australian women's team. There's a bit of a line drawn between the two, although that is narrowing as well, and I think that's a great thing. I don't feel the same distinction in the West Indies. It's just the West Indies. Men, women, it's all kind of one team, a philosophy over there. So the fact that the women have been so competitive in recent years, I read that the Caribbean Premier League are going to expand next year, possibly to have a women's division as well, which will join the Women's Big Bash League and the Super League in the UK. So I think that's one way back into the hearts and minds of local people. You're spot on about basketball and football. When I was touring there in 2015, everyone you spoke to said they didn't fancy cricket anymore. It was all about football and basketball. So there is a big challenge there. I'm not sure whether there's as much of a united purpose across the Caribbean nations as there once was, which is another challenge. Last week I wrote about the Commonwealth Games bid, which the ICC and the ECB currently are mounting with the support of a range of nations, including Australia, and they will not be in the Commonwealth Games per se. One island will have to be nominated. It's likely to be Barbados. Yep. Will be the country that participate in the Commonwealth Games for women's T20 cricket. So again, I'm not sure whether there's as much of a united purpose across those islands as there used to be. So going forward, and I hope this doesn't happen, but there could well be a fracture between the big four and the rest. So if you accept that Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad and Antigua have got the bulk of cricketers over there, and whether that becomes something new. I mean, I hope not. I think all cricket fans would love to see a strong and united West Indies for another 70 years, but we have to be realistic that if they don't get their act together off the field, and we've seen just how many cricketers have made the decision to not play for the West Indies, not least Chris Gayle, he's the obvious example, but there's at least half a dozen of them who've made a call to be on the T20 circuit instead of playing for their country. So if that continues to be the theme, they might have their hand forced.